At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The Beast in the Forest. I want to set down recent events in my life because I'm afraid that this may be my last chance. To begin with, my name is Leon Cowles. I was born in Provo, Utah, although I have lived most of my life here in Portland, Oregon. I've always been a rather intellectual person, preferring books and video games to basketball and football. In grade school, I was a loner, and had few, if any, friends. In middle school and high school, I began to read fantasy novels and mild occult books. At first, just that Wiccan fluff stuff, if anything, keeps people from learning anything of real importance or historical accuracy. Eventually, I got into more intelligent and orthodox literature, such as carefully documented paranormal experiments and well-researched Kabbalic lore. In college, at the Institution of Jewelry Technology in Paris, Texas, my reading turned to Poe, Borges, and Lovecraft. I learned a bit of Hebrew and Latin to be able to read some occult books whose English translations I didn't trust. I also learned the Futhark and Arabic alphabets to better understand various magical symbols. After returning home and finding a job as a jeweler for a local reseller, I started taking long walks in my spare time. I've always felt out of place in society, and hiked through the local forests and mountains to be alone. The more isolated and untouched, the better. The Pacific Northwest is fortunately rich in forests and wild areas to wander to my heart's content. Over time, I became adept at finding excellent locations, sometimes shockingly close to civilization, yet somehow unnoticed to everyone else who passed by. I've even ran across some ruins here and there, some amazingly close to town, but abandoned long ago nonetheless. In a place that could be found on no city map, only 10 blocks away from my house, I found an abandoned water reservoir, along with several buildings left to slowly decay many decades ago. Beneath Rocky Butte, I found a long maze of natural caves, totally untouched by anyone so far, not a half a mile from two of the biggest freeways in the state. On an island in the Columbia River that I swam to, I found an ancient farmhouse and barn, quietly decomposing for who knows how long. These places with ruins are my favorite, bringing a much more solid feeling to the sense of loss and past wonder that I feel about the world. Not my favorite, due to high foot traffic some days, but certainly very close by for me is the famous Forest Park, the largest city park in the world. It's more than 11 miles long and several miles wide in some areas. It covers more than 5,100 acres, and as the name implies, it's almost entirely covered in dense old-growth forest. It's easy to lose your way along many miles of winding trails, and more than once I've gotten turned around myself, despite my experience outdoors. Forest Park is a wild and beautiful place in the light of day, but at night, and in certain especially overgrown groves, where the dense canopy blots out most of the daylight, it has a sinister and feral reputation. Perhaps its dangers lie in its many fissures, canyons, and steep, and often wet, trails. Or just maybe it has something to do with certain ruins in the depths. There are also occasional reports of great cats. We have mountain lions in the area, who carry off small dogs and local animals. What's fact is that danger is present in Forest Park after darkness falls. Once every few years, a body or two is found by hikers, or other dogs, often old, partially eaten, and badly decomposed. I remember in 1999, they found a number of bodies, arranged in some kind of strange diagram, over several hundred feet. Even in the year 2008, they found two corpses there. My own incident at Forest Park began one early afternoon a week ago. I was going to go hiking in the southern central region on a few trails that I've never been on before. I planned on being out until the evening, so I brought along a lunch, iced tea, my mini flashlight, one never knows when they'll find a new cave or ruin, and notebook. I parked my car at the lower McLay trailhead and set off along the edge of the creek, heading into the park. Along my left, the creek ended under a huge wooden lattice that led into a huge sewer pipe and downhill under the city and into the Willamette River. There is a rumor that the Portland catacombs connect to that sewer pipe at some point. Further along the creek is some kind of wooden walkway, raised 20 feet or so above the water and connected to some old, crumbling masonry in and next to the stream. I've read that this used to be a part of the original watershed that served Portland, and I guess that it was part of that. In the bed of the creek, several ancient stone walls and pieces of brickwork were visible to those with a keen eye. Beyond a bridge and a little waterfall, off of the trail, up a hill and behind a huge pine tree, a headstone with the name Oliver can be seen. No one has ever dug up the little grave, so no one knows who or what Oliver used to be. Further still along the steep, rocky, and often slippery wet trail, about 1 mile in, is the Witch's House. This was once a public restroom, but in 1962, it was critically damaged by a storm and abandoned rather than repaired. It's now, by far, the best known and most recent ruin in Forest Park. It's the stone walls and foundation of a small house built into the side of a steep hill. The two basement rooms loomed cold, empty, and reeking of urine and pot through the long open wall facing the trail and creek. At either side of the house is a stone staircase leading to the large single room above. I climbed the stairs and looked through the open doorway to see what I would find today. The Witch's House has a very bad reputation after dark, and has its nickname for a reason. It's said that witches and strange cults perform bizarre rituals here. It's strange that although everyone knows about it, nothing is done to prevent it. But I guess no cops want to hike at night along a long, dangerous trail without a damn good reason, especially when it would be difficult, if not impossible, for backup to be called in under 20 minutes. The tall hills on either side of the valley also seemed to have a confounded way of disrupting radio signals and cell phones in the area. So there isn't even a guarantee that you'd even be able to get a call out. When I looked in, I saw that the cultists had been busy the night before. A red chalk diagram of Kabbalistic origins still laid on the floor. A dozen burnt candles lined its perimeters. And a now dried, garnet-colored fluid.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Was splattered on the floors and walls. Amazingly, anyone who frequents this part of the park will know that this isn't a rare occurrence. Outside the circle, near the corner of the room, was written some Hebrew symbols, arranged in what appeared to be some kind of appeal or prayer. I carefully wrote down what was written. These words took a bit of time to translate, as I did the best I could with my limited knowledge of Hebrew, these symbols written on the walls. It said roughly, "We present an offering / sacrifice of blood in respect / awe / fear to you, mighty Klypoth. May your hunger / anger be appeased / satisfied." The Klypoth in Kabbalic lore are demons utterly alien to this universe. They are neither truly alive or dead by our standards, and seem to be ruled by different laws and physics than our own. According to lore, they existed before this world / universe, their own being destroyed during the creation of ours. To things of this world, they are utterly malignant evil, insane hated, and blasphemy given form. Although they are said to be so mutable in nature that even attributing forms to them may be inaccurate. Most Kabbalists say they are only a myth, representing sin, and the few that believe in them, even Aleister Crowley, would never try to bargain or make pacts with them, for they comprehend no alliances and seek only to destroy and consume truly living things. I wish now that I had taken the legends of the Klypoth more seriously, but I thought of them only as legend monsters like dragons and djinn. After writing down that strange appeal, I continued on, up the hill, and away from the strange and evil little stone house. I walked for miles, winding this way and that through the hills and forest, enjoying the quiet and solitude of the day. Eventually, I became hungry and left the trail, slipping between the bushes and undergrowth. I moved about 50 feet off the trail and into a little clearing to sit down and eat. While eating my lunch of sandwiches and iced tea, a strange thing happened. Something large moved in the vegetation, maybe 40 feet away, off to my left. Thinking that it was a dog or deer, I stood up to look, but saw nothing. A moment later, the commotion began again, I can now actually see the plant life being shoved aside and hear leaves and twigs being crushed. Whatever was making the noise had to at least be as large as a human, but I couldn't see the thing at all. It seemed to be moving in an elliptical pattern, circling beyond me and getting closer. After maybe 2 minutes, the noise had moved in about a 90-degree arc, and was now behind me and 30 feet or less away. It still sounded quite large, and was still totally unseen despite the plant life being no more than 3 feet tall. At this point, I was quite alarmed and decided that I may not want to see whatever it was that was out there. I picked up my day pack and quickly moved back to the trail off in the distance. An hour later, I had all but forgotten my brush with the unseen. It was starting to become dusk, although I didn't have a watch on, so I didn't really know the exact time. I had begun to circle around on the trails and head back towards my car, although I was taking a small, seldom-used trail I had never been on before. As I was circling a little hill, I saw some kind of animal stone pillar standing weathered and overgrown off the trail to my right. Always fascinated by the possibility of examining forgotten artifacts, I went to see what it was. The pillar was a basalt column, about 4 feet high, with some extremely weathered inscriptions on it. The style looked like art of the Pacific Northwest Indian tribes. It seemed to be a picture of a hairy bipedal that was eating or rendering small animals. It made me think of their legends of the old woman of the forest, who some whisper was the name of the Sasquatch. A huge, hairy ape witch who would spirit off young children, never to be seen again. About 40 feet away, I saw another little obelisk that looked identical to the one I just looked at. In between, I saw a large, low circular block of concrete, and a couple of large basalt blocks with channels cut into the tops and sides. I couldn't decide their original purpose of the blocks. The concrete cylinder looked like an old cistern. It was maybe 15 or 16 feet across, but had recently been altered. The cement plate that served as a cap and was almost a foot thick had been partially removed. It had been lifted and slid to one side, leaving about a 3-foot gap to look at. Peering down into it with the aid of my flashlight, I could see that it was about 30 feet deep and badly damaged by the hands of time and/or vandals. Handholds had been gouged into the inside wall, leading down to the cistern floor. A bed of molding leaves and sticks covered the floor, which struck me as odd, since the cap appeared to have been moved extremely recently, and it wasn't late enough in the season for the leaves to start falling anyways. I could also see two large holes in the cement tube at the bottom, one on either side. One of the holes looked quite large, 6 or 7 feet, while the other side, quite a bit smaller, maybe 4 feet in diameter. Having no fear of the dark, enclosed spaces or heights, I began climbing down to further explore this new find. The odor of decaying plant, and possibly animal, matter hung thick in the air, along with the deep scent of wet earth. Both holes led into crudely cut rock and earth passages. I went into the larger one first and followed it back into the hill. I'm not quite sure how long the passage was before it opened into a small chamber. Visually, it looked like it may have been 40 feet or possibly more, but I completely passed through it in only 7 steps, which should only take me 20 or 21 feet. The little chamber was almost spherical and looked to be about 12 feet across. It looked like the nest of some large animal, with a bed of dirty rags and pale sticks in one corner. I saw a couple of shiny glimmers poking out of the pile, and bent down to examine them. The first was an impressive amethyst crystal, about 6 inches long, with many tiny black and red inclusions suspending inside it. The 6 sides, although they looked natural, had been polished, and the base had been grounded flat and polished as well. Some strange glyphs had been engraved into the 6 triangular facets that formed the point. Even with my fairly broad knowledge of ruins and symbols, I was at a loss to the origins of the symbols. They did somewhat look like the pictographs I've seen in Central and South American coins and calendars. The crystal had another quality that made it odd, unique, and sinister in aspect. Whenever I'd look away and could see the crystal with only my peripheral vision, the little red and black inclusions would seem to come to life and start moving, like minuscule fish swimming about in an aquarium. But as soon as I would look at it, they would just stop and be just as I had seen them before. As a jeweler, I've seen a number of exotic techniques for creating illusions in gemstones. Some make it appear to be larger or brighter than they actually are. Some are cut in specific ways to conceal defects, reflect a double image, or even appear to move within the setting. But I've never seen anything like this. Pocketing the crystal for later examination, I turned my attention to the other shiny bit, poking out from under a grimy rag. It was a watch from the 1980s. Its spring band torn apart and its crystal cracked. A shiver went down my spine as my gaze returned to the pile and the pale sticks. As I gingerly pulled one out to look at it, I was horrified to see what I already feared. What I was holding was clearly a human arm or leg bone, snapped in half and many years old. Dropping the once human thing, I turned to retreat from this den of evil. When I got back to the cistern, I looked up expecting to climb back out to safety, but was momentarily paralyzed by fear when I saw something coming into the hole from outside. I shut off my flashlight and darted into the smaller tunnel to hide from whatever it was. It appeared to be a human figure, floating in midair and descending past the concrete lid. It then abruptly fell into an unmoving heap before me with a sickening crunch, quite obviously dead. It was a man, wearing torn and filthy jeans, and equally filthy flannel shirt, and worn in dirty sneakers. His eyes were open with a look of absolute fear that I'll never be able to forget. His wild and unkempt beard was a sea of red from what must have been a terminal throat wound. Above, I saw nothing. Then the lid slowly began to gradually shut. I could see a ghost-like shadow clinging to the gouged handholds in the wall with its feet and to the lid with its hands. It looked like a large black ape, with huge bat-like ears, a fanged canine-like snout, and immense cruel claws on long, ropey arms. As the lid slid shut, it seemed to become more and more corporeal until just before all light failed, it looked completely opaque. I sat still for a moment, hoping to escape its notice, when a huge weight fell invisibly before me, crushing leaves and sticks. I heard a sliding sound, like a giant ragdoll being dragged around, then a nauseous crunching and slurping noise that I thankfully couldn't see. Hopefully that the nightmare fiend before me was adequately distracted, I began to slowly and blindly move my way to the smaller tunnel. Unfortunately, with all the rumble of the shattered cistern wall about me, I nearly slipped and had to catch myself with my hand, making a small but audible slapping sound. The crunching and slurping instantly stopped, and the giant ragdoll fell to the floor. A sniffing sound and the crunch of leaves a step closer than it had been moments ago. I knew it had found me, and my mind momentarily snapped. I would attack this unseen thing, and at least not go down without a fight. I silently picked up a large rock, I think about the size of a brick, and switched on my flashlight, hoping to catch the living nightmare by surprise. The surprise was mine, though. All I saw was the discarded corpse, now even more reddened than it was before. Where was the black horror? Was it hiding in the cistern beyond my field of vision? Then, another step was heard, crunching leaves and twigs even closer to me. I saw the leaves stir, but I couldn't see the monster. Unable to understand where it was or how to fight it, I threw my stone missile with all the strength and fury of my adrenaline-flushed body. All at once, the rock struck the air and deflected off the side. A small spray of foul black fluid fell to the ground, and an unearthly scream of pain and rage began not 10 feet in front of me. I turned and ran. As I turned to retreat, I saw from the edge of the flashlight's illumination a huge ghostly ape clutching its face with a giant feral paw. I fled as fast as I could to wherever the tunnel led. My attack momentarily stunned the thing, I think, and it was unable to maneuver its huge bulky body through the smaller tunnel as quickly as I could. The tunnel wound about and descended over a huge distance, miles I think. It eventually broke through another concrete wall and into a wide drainage sewer, one side definitely ascending and the other descending. I could no longer hear the black fiend behind me, but I wasn't going to take chances. I pulled off my day pack, taking only my notebook, and tossed it down the sewer in the descending direction, just at the edge of the water. I hoped this might mislead the phantom ape and buy me a little bit more time should it reach the wider sewer before I was able to find a way out. I ran off in the opposite direction, taking care to step only in the water to help conceal my scent. The sewer tunnel was about 7 feet in diameter, with water flowing in a channel along the bottom. The water looked fairly clear and clean, except for the occasional leaf or two. Little salamanders and crayfish scuttled out of my path as I went, making me pretty sure I was in the sewer below the McLay trailhead. After maybe a quarter of a mile, I began to see a lighter patch in the darkness. Another minute, and I was at the sewer's mouth, under the giant wooden lattice I had seen earlier that day. Night had come to the overgrown valley when I was trapped underground. Except for the gurgling of the little creek, all the world seemed as still and quiet as a grave. Fortunately, escape was possible through me through the wooden wall near the middle of the lattice, just above the level of the water. A large rock was wedged between two of the beams. I was easily able to squeeze through this slightly enlarged gap, being both thin and flexible. Now I was only 1,000 feet from my car, I climbed the lattice back up to the trail, now exhausted, and kept moving as quickly as I could towards my goal. My pants were ripped in several places, and my hands were covered in scratches from the speed of my desperate flight, but I was at least alive. I climbed back into my car, drove home, and collapsed into a deep, dreamless sleep. Somehow, I sleep better when under stress. I don't know why, but I do. I thought I was safe. I thought that the nightmare was behind me. A week later, and I was starting to feel better. In the meantime, I had done some reading and research. I decided that the thing that I saw was a Kliphoth, ruled by the laws of an extinct universe. It seems that it reacts to light differently, being visible in darkness rather than light. If those Indian columns are any indication of how long it's been around, then I would guess that it's probably unaging and may not even be able to be killed at all. However, I'm sure that something as vile and violent as that isn't around and active all the time, or the body count would be in the hundreds each year. Perhaps it could only be alive at certain times or under certain astrological conditions. I don't know. That crystal baffles me. I can't be sure what connection it has to that Kliphoth horror. It may be the thing that binds it to this world, like a golem's phylactery. But it's not over. Earlier today, when I was looking into my backyard, I saw the bushes being moved through and something stirring the fallen leaves on the grass. I watched carefully and knew that it was no mere wind or neighborhood cat. I knew it had come for me, or the crystal, or both. I smashed the crystal moments before I started to write this. Now all I could do is wait and see what happens.